Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
People say treat yourself like you need a reason. But McDonald's treats are perfect for every day. Like bold McCafe iced coffee. Get any size for $1.69. Or pick up any size sweet tea for a dollar. The large is served in an insulated cup that keeps your tea cold. Feeling a little extra something-something? Try the classic bakery sweets like an apple fritter. With so many ways to treat yourself, you don't need an excuse. Just come back tomorrow. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Turn off your laptop. We're on staycation.
I'm on TotalWine.com. They have so many rosés, chardonnays, and proseccos. It feels like a real vacation.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, ridiculously low prices. Total Wine and more.
Hey, it's Stephen here from the LFC Day Trippers. As many Liverpool fans will know, Sean Cox was viciously attacked outside of Anfield against Roma in April of this year. As part of the fundraising for that, a GoFundMe page has been set up, which is doing amazing work to raise funds for him and his family and the recovery required. The LFC Day Trippers are an Irish-based podcast, and we felt that it was time that we did something to help with the fundraising. As part of that, we're recording a series of interviews with various Liverpool, Ireland, and world sports stars that we will be releasing over the next week to 2 weeks. What we would like from anybody involved in the Liverpool community is to get behind this if they can. There's some amazing content which will be great to listen to and a great watch for the videos that we put out. However, really, this is about Sean and his family and the recovery required. Each set of interviews will be put into a bundle of five costing £5, with all proceeds going to his family. The link to those interviews and the Patreon account that will be involved will be in this post. And if you can click on that, it's so easy to get involved, subscribe, and put your money towards an amazing cause for Sean. He has a long road ahead of him. His family have a huge amount of work to do to get him even remotely back to a normal life, which hopefully can happen. But it needs your help, it needs our help, it needs everybody together. The Liverpool fan base is amazing when we work together. But let's do it now and help Sean out.
Good evening. This is, of course, the Day Trippers podcast, and we are back in the bunker, back in the place in association with Redsbet. As you know, this podcast is brought to you in association with Redsbet, which is a betting site tailor-made for Liverpool supporters. Redsbet aims to share half of the net profits with Liverpool supporters and fan causes, so no matter what, the fans end up a winner. Check out the odds on Redsbet.com or download the Redsbet app and share the glory and gamble responsibly. And we should have the specials and stuff along later on in the week, which will be part. Well, there's no final whistle this week, so it'll have to be part of. Gav, are you doing anything this week with the lads?
Thursday night, I think, yeah.
Okay, we'll throw something in on Thursday night.
I might just do a little periscope through the keyhole or something.
Oh, through the keyhole, yeah, somebody's gap. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Maybe you could go down to Dolphins Barn.
Empty the dishwasher.
Yeah. Like that. Go down to Dolphins Barn and see if you can spot some four before
it's floating out yet. Why we don't just record that intro about Redsbet and then just...
Because I change it around every week. Yeah, because otherwise it doesn't sound natural as it comes in.
Right.
Yeah, you have to keep the natural effect to it.
Now it sounds really professional.
As a professional broadcaster.
Yeah, as a professional. That is professional now. Okay, where are we? So, in tonight with me, of course, is Stephen Daly. There's Gavin.
Andy Young. What did I say, Gavin?
Well, Gavin is here.
I'm here as well.
Oh, yeah, you're there as well. Yeah.
Gavin Doyle.
And joining us, of course, is Off the Ball's Nathan Morphy. Thanks for coming in, Nathan.
Cheers, lads.
Like, as you can see, welcome along to the really professional setup. Yeah, I know.
We did have to be with some real pros.
Unlike that Joe Malloy fella.
That's my personal idea.
Just doing a good job.
Are the blue nose that I have to spend a lot of time with as well.
Better look at the agenda, because this is where we've completely got off agenda in terms of what it is. But lads, where do we start?
Well, we weren't allowed to talk about Cade and we weren't allowed to talk about Henderson, and so maybe start there.
Okay, so I have written here, I'll skip over the first couple of things, and Cade and below par performances.
Yep.
So I may as well go into it. Hendo's been taking a lot of flack lately for his sideways and backwards passing, which he's a master at. And Cade, we're still waiting to see the real Naby Keita, and he's yet to stand up after this weekend's game. Was there flashes, or are we just looking at a player who's really struggling to adapt to the league, Nathan?
Well, it's interesting when you look at how good Fabinho has been, and you look at Andy Robertson last year, mm-hmm. and the break he gave them at the start of the season, whereas Chieti threw him in right from the start. I wonder, does he regret that now? Mm-hmm. Would he have preferred, now maybe he couldn't do it, and have his two big money midfield signings sitting on the bench or not in the squad at all for the first 3 months mm-hmm. of the season. But he's been literally hamstrung with injuries. He hasn't really... I thought actually his first initial burst was quite good. There was good signs of decent energy about him. He just looks a little bit lost at the moment. Probably not helped by the fact that Liverpool seem to play a different formation every second game at the mm-hmm. moment, a different midfield, a different role to play, different role for him, whereas maybe Fabinho gets to do the same thing aside from playing centre-back, but when he's in midfield, gets to do a similar job. The Chieta's struggling to figure out what exactly his role is. I kind of struggle to figure out what his role is mm-hmm. when you're watching him. Is he meant to be box-to-box? Is he just meant to sit there in the left side of the three and let Robertson bomb past and Mane drop deep? Where does he fit into that? So maybe there's just a little bit of confusion. It's probably too early, I think, to write him off.
I think he plays a very different role to say. Say, for example, when Wijnaldum...
Just so you know, Nathan, writing off players early is my specialty.
Before the window's
gone. I did have him, I think if we go back to the fourth show in August, just before we came off pre-season, said I thought that he would potentially flop out of all the players.
Oh, well, listen, if you can't judge off pre-season, what can you do?
Exactly, I'm looking forward to May when I can say I told you something.
Joe Allen Mark II, I think you called him.
But I did that on Twitter, and honestly, I'm still getting responses back. Although the Pickford Sweet took over since then, so it's
there was no grounds for that. Then he had a good preseason. He started off well the first two games.
I basically had a random lottery twisty wheel and was picking players. Who
but is he a victim? Is he a victim of his own, I suppose, capabilities? So he wants to get into the box. He wants to affect. He wants to break those lines, similar to maybe what Oxlade-Chamberlain did. At the moment, he is filling in for where Wijnaldum would normally play. They play a very, very different game. If you think about the amount of times I saw him level with their centre-halves at the weekend, you were looking at Fabinho, you were looking at Henderson, and looking at where they were in the middle of the park. And Keita had just occupied that space between the right-hand the right centre-back and the right full, between Wan-Bissaka and whoever it was,
Tompkins
at centre-half. And I was saying to myself, he was nearly... I know what he was trying to do, but he nearly would have been better dropping 8-10 yards... off that and picking up the ball and trying to affect the play, either break the lines with the ball at his feet or to play a ball into the front three. But it was almost like he was trying too hard, and I think that might be an element of him. He might be in that scenario where he's trying too hard to get involved, to get that first goal, to give himself that little confidence boost, and it's affecting his general play. Who knows? But
he's a victim of many circumstances, in my opinion. Sorry, that word is fucking mental. Naby Keita, the player at Leipzig, played in the three. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. And
don't be making stuff up now.
No, because you told me. You fucking told me. You're probably lying to me. But if you watch it, like Leipzig were really good in the Bundesliga, but you have to remember, Leipzig were a team that teams thought they could get at, and he was able to pick up a ball in fairly good space in midfield and find the ball through. He's arrived in England now, and Liverpool, the way they played this season, are coming up against, like Brighton, like Palace to a certain extent, but most teams they play against, they're going to sit deep, they're going to pack, they're going to be really narrow, and it's hard to play those balls, or even go on a run with the ball. It's so hard. If Naby Keita in Liverpool's team last season would have been outrageous, in my opinion.
That's where I agree with you. Yeah, I think in the midfield setup from last year...
Because we were underdog kind of last year, you know, the kind of way, and in that side you would have said, do you know something? He's going to get space. He's going to get the ball on the half turn, and he's going to cause damage. Now, when you look at him, like you said, Steve-O, he's picking up this position. I think he's being shoehorned into the team. I don't think he starts if Wijnaldum is fit and Fabinho's fit and Henderson's fit. I think he's at the moment he's fourth choice. Nathan said there about him being pushed in early, and is it a thing? It is a thing, and the price is a thing. Andy Robertson was 8 million and nobody gave a shit really that he wasn't playing. But then he was brought in, he was brought along in a nice way. Fabinho the same. Fabinho at Arsenal, a bit ropey, he changed things a little bit and he looks great. Naby Keita for me could be really good for us in Europe towards the end of this European campaign if we can get past Bayern Munich, because the games open up and we'll still be underdogs of some teams.
Yeah, I get you. But I just think for me with Keita anyway, where we are is, at what point does the player start to believe he can't succeed? And this happens with players.
That's all down to Jurgen Klopp.
No, even Jurgen Klopp, giving him all the opportunities and all the chances, there's times where players just don't succeed at clubs because things happen. The injuries happen. Never gets that run of form. By the time he comes back to the team, the shape of the team and the way that midfield has completely changed to when they signed them to play in essentially a three in midfield, and he'd go box to box either side of somebody who's just going to sit there all the time. Do you remember how Milner was playing and they were looking for Wijnaldum to play, and they're getting Henderson just to sit in front of the defence, and those two boys were going up and down all the time?
Did Chamberlain not struggle at the start last season?
Absolutely.
Was it not the City 4-3 where he suddenly came to life?
Chamberlain played in a League Cup game against Leicester last season, and he played off the right and he was atrocious. The only word for it, he couldn't control a ball, trap a ball, pass a ball, he couldn't do anything. But you look at Shaqiri talks about 20 minutes at the end of games, and Shaqiri has a great, Shaqiri has this great input on the team. I'd love to see Keita getting that 20 minutes in a game where we're winning and he comes on and he gets a chance to influence an open game. I just find him a tad unlucky. Form not great, but a tad unlucky.
Yet again, sorry Andy, I won't take long on this. Yet again, last season we were stretching teams because Salah was right, Mane was left, and Firmino was central, and it was given us the ability to open up a defence. As we stand at the moment, we've got a opposition that have quite narrow back fours. So that's a little bit of a problem for him, because he's not getting that same range of movement in the middle of the park that he would have had last season. I agree with the lads on what they're saying on that.
I remember the fat back forward actually having that conversation. It was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was a very measured conversation about Keita, and a lot of excuses made for him, very legitimate, but he's played a good bit of football since then. And the thing I don't agree with when you talk about the role he's playing, the position he's playing, he's finding himself in the same areas of the pitch that he did at Leipzig, picking the ball up in the middle of the park and running at the opposition's back four, and he's just running into trouble. It's like he's on a mission to nothing. He's just running into players. For Leipzig, he was really good at winning the ball up high, just like Fabinho is, really proactive in tackling high up the pitch, nipping the ball away and getting away and creating chances. He's not doing that when he's playing for Liverpool. He's in the centre of the park. People are saying he's playing off the left. He's not really. It's a narrow enough tree behind Salah. So he's playing centre midfield. He's lots of opportunities to show his talents he did last year. I think we just have to just kind of accept now that it's probably not going to happen for him this season, and a bit of a fresh start next season.
We have to remember, he wasn't very good for Leipzig last season either. You know, it was the season
This is the thing. Players can't turn on and off form. And as I said, he lost the head a bit at Leipzig because he knew he was going to Liverpool this season. And then you look at it and you say, it's very hard to come back in. Now, he had a great pre-season. He did have a great start to the season. You remember the West Ham game, the Crystal Palace away. He looked a different class. He looked like a really good version of Joe Allen. And that's not a bad thing. When Joe Allen came to the football club, it was really, really strong in terms of like what we expected him to be. We expect him to go box to box in terms of what it was. But we expected him to do a bit of everything. And that's exactly what we've expected Keita to do. And so far, bar that forced initial spell, he loses a spot. As I said, the shape of the team has changed to put in Fabinho, to change it around. We're accommodating Wijnaldum. We've suddenly got the ability to play two in front of a back four that can also go and attack. And we're looking to move Salah around to give him more goal-scoring chances, because teams, as Nathan mentioned in the Periscope, teams have figured out that if you put two players over on Salah and he's out on the right wing, he doesn't get the same space to operate in. And they've had to move that front three around to keep them moving the way.
It's a tough gig, though, that role he's trying to play, because even Wijnaldum, as consistent as he's been, like, you do watch that midfield when I prefer now when they sort of play the 4-2-3-1 almost, because when they're playing the three midfield, they can all pop up anywhere, Whereas Wijnaldum's probably so experienced at this stage, he has a bit more awareness, whereas Chiesa just seems to get lost at times. But there's no, last season you knew exactly what the midfield three were meant to do, exactly what the roles were. Whereas this season, Liverpool's style has changed, Robertson's a lot more involved down that left wing. I just think it's hard to get himself involved.
It's just getting a role for someone where they grow into a role, and when they grow into that role, then you see the best of them. Like you speak about Wijnaldum. For me, Wijnaldum, particularly away last season in a tree, would disappear. He would genuinely disappear in a game, and you'd be wondering, you'd see him coming off as a sub, and you're going, oh, he was playing, was he? And the thing was, and for me, even the first game of the season, we were at Anfield, and we watched Wijnaldum, and he had a dedicated role deep in the midfield, and he knew what he had to do. And it's like if you tell him, you just do that, he'll go and do it. But if you ask him to go, and this is not a slant, go with the guy, but if you ask him to stop other teams, fill space, create things at the same time, I think he loses a little bit. And that's where I've a little bit of sympathy for Kate. Andy's right as well. You're probably looking at it and saying, look, this season, it's not a write-off, but don't expect him to burst into Leipzig 2017. Just don't expect that.
It just doesn't look like the sharpness is going to come on. Like, it's too late. It's probably, we're midway through the season. Everybody's gone at this stage. I just don't see the sharpness that is required coming into this game.
Unless it's just confidence is the thing. Unless, like, I agree, it'll be interesting what they do in the Champions League games. Maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain makes this miraculous recovery and can play some part. But you do look at Cade and think he could actually, where you are playing against teams who won't sit back, who'll come at you all the time.
Where they think they can beat us.
Exactly. That may suit him down to the ground. But also then you'd imagine Klopp maybe looks at him defensively and thinks,
that's
can he
point,
trust them against those bigger
teams? I think
there
is still a chance for him, because there is that opportunity for him to do what Oxlade-Chamberlain did last season. Yet again, it was January, February time before he came into his own. And it takes, sometimes it just takes one game. It can just take one game where it just clicks and and it happens then. We got a quality sound engineer. But yeah, we it could just be that.
I did a duffer one.
Where it just happens for him, and then from there it's. You know, 3-4 games on a run, and he's then he's just a key member of that midfield 4 or 5 players.
Henderson, lads, he's taken a fair bit of stick.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stand by my own opinion on it, and I'm not for change on it. He's ideal in the games, these type of games, where the game is completely in front of him, where he very rarely has to turn and more or less spend his time turning on the ball or turning with the ball, because it's there and he can orchestrate stuff that's in front of him, and he looks really good in those games. It's why Wijnaldum looks better in the bigger games, where you are turning, where you have to be able to take the ball off your back
centre half,
and then turn 180 and start playing the ball forward. That really isn't Henderson's game. And I know, Andy, you're looking at me like I've got two heads, but honestly, if you look at where he struggles with, it's turning with the ball.
I know what you're saying, but it's normally teams that are just looking to get the ball away, and he's able to pick it up, recycle it, and play forward all the time.
Yeah, and he's much more forward and much more attacking. And much
I don't
more
necessarily
forward.
Agree with you. I'm just actually interpreting what you said for Andy.
All right, so
change it to Andy.
Yeah. What Klopp likes about Henderson, he doesn't lose the ball. He plays the game in front of him. Like, it's just not a natural thing for him to be turning on the ball.
Yep.
He wasn't brought up as a deep line midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lot more attacking. He was a lot more box to box. Klopp has reinvented him, whether it's just because he recognises the discipline in his game that he'll do what he's told, or whether he recognises that his injuries has hampered him as a box to box midfielder. He's I don't know whether you read this, but he's second most effective XG assister since Christmas. But he's doing mad numbers now.
Unfortunately, all his XG assisters are Sadio Mane.
He keeps fucking burying them into the sand.
He's become.
How many small and big letters does he get for those?
I don't fucking know, but. I don't know. I can't read those big fucking graphs they do.
Sesame Street could do an episode on Jordan Henderson's stats.
The net result is the summary at the end of
count
all.
Count on count doing the XG.
But anyway, the net result is he's an influential midfielder now, whereas people were saying all he could do was fucking pass the ball sideways. He started to pass the ball forward more. Now, I think that's more down to playing with Fabinho a bit in the game, because they seem to complement each other very well.
It's mad the way the more you pass the ball forward, the better chance they have of getting an assist, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't
Is that though because teams are sitting so far back that he has far more time on the ball to actually think about things?
I agree with Andy. I think he's told to keep the ball. I genuinely believe that. Like,
of course
Nathan spoke earlier on the Periscope about being at Anfield, and you know, like, the crowds are amazing, and you know the whole under the lights sort of thing. And but one thing you said earlier was interesting was when you're at Anfield, the little amount of time that the fans will give players before they'll fucking lose the plot, because there's always a tension at the ground regardless what game was. I can tell you now, if Henderson gets the ball toward the edge of his own goal and tries to clip one around the corner to Salah, and a fella nips in and gets it, there'll be fucking war at Anfield. Right, they'll be burning seats and fucking them up. And that's the way it is, right? So what do you want? Do you want this guy to try be fucking, I don't know, Pirlo, or do you want him to keep the ball? Like, the mix they have there is he keeps it, he goes wide with it, he goes back with it, he goes forward with it. Like,
funny thing is, and the other player, Fabinho,
and he's the man that does look to be a bit more creative. You have to have a mix here. You can't have two fellas going on the side. I'm fucking Maradona and I'm deep as midfield.
Hang on, Gav. I think this is it. I think the mix, and that's why I positioned it in the Periscope about Fabinho and anyone else, right? Because Wijnaldum likes to keep the ball and recycle the ball and play it safe when he's there, but will turn slightly quicker than Henderson can turn on the ball, or accept it and turn with the ball a lot quicker. But the true midfielder that's putting the verticality into the midfield, he's the one that wants to go from back to front, whereas the other two boys are concerned with containing and retaining the possession of the ball. So if you play Wijnaldum and you play Henderson in that midfield, now we couldn't play Wijnaldum obviously because he was injured at the beginning, but you play the two of them, that's why it looks very flat, and that's why it looks very
They do similar jobs, albeit slightly differently. Yeah. They're performing a similar task.
But if you look at the three of them, if the three of them are fit, you'd probably see Wijnaldum starting every game.
Yeah.
Right. And you'd probably see Fabinho and Henderson alternating. And if we're talking about Henderson keeping the ball and Fabinho verticality and words, other words you've made up, but the thing is like, when you switch it and you play Wijnaldum and you play Fabinho, you know what I mean? When Alvin goes in there and keeps it, but as you're saying, he's a bit braver on it. He's just a different type of player to the other ones. You're just going to have to get over that.
Well, I don't think Klopp wants to play Henderson if everybody's fit and on form.
I think he's
very fortunate to be getting in the team as the season goes on for these bigger matches. I think he wants to play Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Oxlade-Chamberlain if he's available. Probably Milner, but Milner's form is dipped a little bit over the last one.
And he's playing in goal at this fucking stage.
I don't know. I was never Henderson's biggest fan, but I just think since Van Dijk came, Henderson has been made obsolete, because you don't, like, every time he picks it up off the centre half, like, why are you taking 3 yards away from Van Dijk?
He's
a better passer of the ball than you are. There's literally no, get out of his way. Let Van Dijk step 10 yards further forward. Cover back for him if you want, but don't play this
needless,
that gets 3 yard
pass.
Quick 1-2, and still you haven't turned to face the goal, whereas Van Dijk spent 10 seconds looking forward and spotting where everybody is. So that's where I think where the frustration crops up with Henderson. I get that he's probably improved certain aspects of his game. He's probably getting rid of it a bit quicker because everyone's getting on his back and he's so aware of it. But I do think if Oxlade-Chamberlain gets back fit, or Milner can get his form and get back to where he was earlier in the season, I think he'd have Milner ahead of Henderson.
I think Milner had such a good season last year because of, yet again, that openness of our midfield and the opposition. I don't see James Milner getting in. I think probably what we end up doing is playing Shaqiri a little bit more. When you have Wijnaldum, I think he's more likely to play Shaqiri when he has Wijnaldum and Fabinho, and he puts Firmino nearly as that third midfielder, if you want to call it that. He plays Mane, Firmino and Shaqiri with Salah in front of him.
I think he's definitely settled on a two, rather than, you know, a one and a two. I hate doing all this, but do you know what I mean? He's definitely settled on a two, because, like, I've seen today on Twitter, I was seeing people arguing over a single pivot and a double pivot, and we changed because of Fabinho. The thing is, it suits them all to play in a two, because when Alden or Henderson, I remember playing Sevilla last season in the Champions League, and they targeted Henderson because he was deep on his own, and he just played around him. Wijnaldum can have it done to him. Fabinho's had it done to him at Arsenal. It just suits all of them to play in a two, and that's the way he's going to go with it. And that's when you have to look at
Oxlade-Chamberlain, like you said, Shaqiri, Keita, if he comes into it. Milner, for me, might be the odd man out on the whole team, but I don't think he suits the role.
Isn't that where we are still waiting to sign a Coutinho replacement? Ideally, that player is the one that would fit in front of the two all the time.
I think Coutinho's replacement is Firmino. That's my shouting.
Well, it shouldn't be, because he's not capable of doing the role.
No, but the position that you want to play him in, I don't think he trusts a Coutinho type to go in and play as a tour man in there anymore.
I don't think we're going to see a luxury midfielder in the centre of the park.
No.
It's the team has to work too hard.
Why would we have gone and been willing to spend 50 million quid on Fekir? And it clearly was that close
because
to being
I don't think he's as much of a luxury player as Coutinho.
Yeah, but so
I don't think Coutinho is a luxury player.
Klopp has said it.
I think Fekir's versatility was what we are looking for. He can play in that midfield. He plays for Leon in that midfield. He works hard, but he can also do what Firmino's doing now at the minute, and he can also do what the wide men do. I think Salah is there forward from here on in, and I think Firmino is that man now that Fekir is not there.
On the replacement for Coutinho, and you follow it and have a good idea of what the rumours are around transfers and all that. What Liverpool do for next season, do you think it depends on whether they win the league or not? Do you think FSG look at Liverpool if they win the league and think, job done?
There's an
or
element,
do you go and
well, they're about to be in, it's about to be
try and kick on again.
Don't.
They made the single biggest year profit.
That's fine. I don't care about them making profits.
Which is absolutely brilliant.
Because they've always committed to putting the money back in.
At the same time, I don't think winning the league dictates how they spend. What it does dictate is the type of player you bring in.
Mm.
Because suddenly, players say, well, actually, we can win trophies here now. Mm. Where at the moment it's all about the lure of potentially winning the trophy.
And Jurgen Klopp and whatever.
Like, you put a league title.
Yeah, but their big profit would be on 2017. Would that be the returns for 2017?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, it would be. It wouldn't be even their Champions League run last year that you'd be talking about a profit now. So, but what you are talking about is whether, and we'll only just see where they're at or where their heads are at to an extent if we do win the league, whether they want to become perennial winners. And multiple front winners, or whether they now see this as an opportune time to move it on. I don't think they do. I think they're quite happy owning Liverpool and seeing that as long as that television money is there, the value of this.
The only thing they could do is win a league and then go and win a European Cup, and then it's that pinnacle where you go, you name your price, and then you walk.
If they want it,
but that would be the more Abramovich style of owner, you know. He has a horn for fucking managing a football team, wants to win everything, he wins it, and then it doesn't mean fuck all anymore.
Then he pretends he can't get a visa and all. Yeah, I remember
that. He's Israeli then.
Oh, I'm not allowed in, lads.
Sorry! Yeah. And I have the wallet here, if you can only let me in.
Just over in the back of a truck in Cali.
He's pulling off my internet, I can't send him.
Didn't bring the codes.
Yeah. But FSG's whole thing is owning sports clubs or being involved in sport, and they multiply the value of the club and they go and win things. And I mean, that's what they're going to sell.
I don't think they've really been one for selling on any of their assets.
I think
didn't they sell
a football team in America?
Maybe so. I don't know. I don't follow the NFL. I'm going to say it was the Cleveland Browns.
No.
What? No, it wasn't. I'm just going to say that.
They had a soccer club.
John Henry had a baseball club in Florida at one stage, but he hasn't owned. This is the fourth soccer club he's owned.
Like
I'm pretty sure they bought a club of some description.
They looked at the New England Revolution, but they didn't buy it.
Winning the league obviously wouldn't do any harm in potential signings, but I think it was Rory Smith who had a good article probably 2 or 3 years ago about once you start getting into the Champions League every single year.
That's what does it for players.
That does it. Yeah. So once they can sign this summer and think, I'll be playing Champions League football for the next 2-3 years, I will go to your club. You can lose that quite quickly. That's probably United are starting to find out now that players are looking at it going,
do I, don't I?
Are they going to be playing Champions League football next season? Probably not.
Yeah.
Is there any great guarantee they'll be playing it the season after? Not really. Whereas suddenly you're looking at Liverpool thinking, well, they're probably
should be playing
for the next 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah.
Which again makes it a lot easier to sign those better young players.
And that's where you're looking to buy, isn't it? It's the Dybalas that just as he went to Juve, it's that level of player nearly that you're looking at. That's what I'm talking about when we were talking earlier on about taking Zaha. You know, you want to be taking that cream of the crop, the absolute elite 22-year-old. I'm bringing them in.
Well, I think if you win the league, you suddenly start. You can look at somebody like Isco. You can look at James Rodriguez when you're talking about this type of player who will come in and make an impact on that.
What's Isco now? 28, I just don't.
26
is
complete.
Yeah, Christ, he just seems to be around forever.
I know, he's been around for so long. But like, again, these type of players, suddenly you can compete. You're not worried about losing your best players to Real and Barca because you're at the same. You're on the same platform as them. You're at the same level. The players are looking at this team and saying, this team has already got to the Champions League final, has now won a trophy, won a league, whatever it is, which is a major trophy. They're looking at, this is potentially a Champions League winning side. So even if we get into quarterfinals, semi-finals this year, you're not just doing final and then disappearing into oblivion. If we had gone out of the group stage, that's where the doubt creeps in. But this allows you to go platform, build.
Yeah,
build,
players
build.
Don't choose to not sign for Barcelona because they didn't. Like, when's the last time Barca won the Champions League? It's a few years back now at this stage. But they're perennial challengers. They're always challenging for the league, and therefore they're an attractive.
I don't think that'll ever change. I think Liverpool, unfortunately, maybe not this summer, but in the next 2 or 3 years, will lose some of their better players to Real Madrid and Barcelona just because it's a bloody nice place to live.
Yeah.
Just as much money. But that's and the as cycle. You say, you'll still play football at the elite level.
That is the cycle. And like, you're talking about not losing players to Barca and Real Madrid. Liverpool, if they win a league this season or go win a European Cup, whether it be this or next season, and as you said, it's a constant thing. You have to start looking at turning them tables and going to Barcelona and Real Madrid and saying, we want your player. Yeah. You know, they've experienced Spain, likes of Isco. He's Spanish, he's experienced it. Can I try something different? Whereas when you take the likes of a Suarez, Coutinho, they come to England, they have a great time. It's platform. Always wanting to get.
Alisson, in the back of his head, is looking at what's his position in 3 or 4 years down the line.
Absolutely.
Does Liverpool get me the Real move, the Barcelona move? And that's what he's thinking in his own head. Mm-hmm. And he knows that this is a platform. Roma gave him the platform to get to Liverpool. Liverpool will give him the platform to go to one of those two sides. And ultimately, you can see he's a Brazilian player. He's looking at this as being the pinnacle of where
But that's a good business model as well for Liverpool's point of view. If, as they have shown time and time again to young Brazilian or young South American players, come to us when you're at a good, when you're 22, 23,
you can win things, you can compete, you'll play at the Champions League, and listen, in 5 years, 4 years,
we'll
hit your peak,
we'll send you. They're nearly making the deal a year before. Give us one more year and we'll put this price in.
But if you start winning leagues, you start winning the Champions League, that's going to prolong that kind of thing by a couple of years anyway.
Absolutely.
So whereas we may have got maybe 5 years out of a player, 4 years out of a player, start winning things, you might get 7 years.
The other thing is the transfer fees, the way they're gone at the moment, actually makes it prohibitive for Barcelona, for Real Madrid, to build a team of Galacticos the way they did before. Because I said this before, revenues have not exploded in the same way the transfer fees have.
No, absolutely not.
So they're still making a relatively similar amount of money off the TV deal. They're a relatively similar amount of money off their ticket sales, whatever it might be. But a player's price has gone up threefold.
Well, 10 years ago, 200 million buys you 4 Galacticos. Now it buys you 1.
Yeah.
Or 3/4 of 1.
And 10 years ago, 200 million buys you Liverpool.
Yeah, true. But like that, you know, you can't go out and buy 450 million quid's worth of talent because FFP just doesn't allow it.
Yeah. So TV deal is the big deal breaker. I mean, I don't know, how does TV deals compare in Spain?
Well, they manage their own.
So Barcelona and Real Madrid on this deal, I think, got up in about 150 million,
right,
which will be the equivalent of
Premiership
top four in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But it was everybody else down below.
They get nothing.
So what, you're guaranteed 105 million if you come last in the Premier League?
Yeah.
Whereas that's certainly not the case in Spain.
Again, I think, though, the winning the league, this allows Liverpool to go to, even if it's not the Barcelona's, it allows them to go to the Atletico Madrid, the Bayern Munich's, the Juventus's, and take their players.
Yeah.
Dortmund's.
You can go.
Anyone bar PSG, City, and Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Well, they also have something else. They have Jurgen Klopp, look at Virgil van Dijk, who could have gone to Manchester City for better wages, but decided, because of what Klopp had said to him, whatever it was, we're going to build this statue outside Anfield when you lead us to the title. But he signed. So you can go to guys like Frankie de Jong or De Ligt, these brilliant young Dutch players who are obviously playing with van Dijk, who Manchester City are after, Barcelona are after, and say, actually, as you said,
now their international captain is ringing them.
But now your international captain's ringing, and you can play for a manager who you're going to bloody love.
Like Van Dijk could be ringing De Ligt and saying, come and be my partner for Holland and for Liverpool for the next 5 years.
Can I just
get your move?
I get you a weekend at Blackpool.
Let me use that just to pivot back into the game. Right, the goals we conceded, because there is, like, it's the first time in a long we conceded more than two goals. It's the first time in forever that we conceded three goals. Now, probably the last goal is a bit of a misnomer because it's so late.
It's a nice goal.
But did you notice the way Hodgson set up to basically attack our right flank.
Yeah.
Do you think that would have been different had we had Gomez or Trent?
Yes.
I will load that up by saying I don't think, because that's exactly what they did last year.
No.
Yeah. Teams tend to
target Trent.
Target Trent. Yeah. They just do, and Trent fucking passes with flying colours every single time.
Not every single time. I seem to remember a certain Marcus Rashford tearing the arse out of him a couple of other times.
Yeah. But at the same time, they conceded fuck all goals this year.
Yeah.
You know, all our problems came from right back. That's nothing against Milner.
No, absolutely not.
It's just like he was thrown in there. He doesn't like playing full back anymore.
And he was put up against an absolute speed merchant.
Yeah. The first goal, he was after being roasted a couple of times there anyway. So his confidence must have been in his boots. But then Matip kind of plays Zaha onside.
The first goal is straight out of the Egil Olsen school of football, where they basically get nailed. Palace are getting nailed in around the edge of their own 18-yard box. They basically just do a switch of play to the far side, and it goes down the flank, and then it's whipped back across and across.
Now, that's when they got out of our press, was it?
It was the top right-hand side that he just pivoted, turned, and played the ball out. And I'm still not convinced that he knows that there's a player out there. I think he's hit that in hoping that there's a player, Zaha or somebody, is in that area, because it wasn't a convincing, like, oh, there's him, and I'm pinging the ball out. It's a real floaty, lofty pass that goes out. And it just happens to be that a player is standing free there and allows them to break.
Yeah, well, a massive problem that was, the press was so high and defence was so deep. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to press, you need defence up a lot further. Matip was about 5 or 6 yards behind Van Dijk, Milner and Robertson. So that created a problem, because it gave Zaha such space out on the left.
Yep.
By the time Milner got onto it, Zaha knew what he was going to do. He could see the game in front of him, and he just had to shift past him.
And the issue is Fabinho isn't switched on, and it's probably difficult in that situation because it's so manic when a team's breaking. But Robertson has... whoever it is at
Townsend.
Right, no, it's Townsend and someone else that's right foot. And Townsend breaks in. Fabinho doesn't spot him until too late. Townsend's free. So it is a good goal. It's a lack of communication. Yeah.
Like, I wonder how angry Klopp is about that goal, because
I wouldn't say massively.
They smell blood. There are half an inch away from getting an interception.
I'd be very surprised if your Klopp doesn't come in and say, that'll happen every now and again.
I think what actually does them in the whole thing is Tompkins takes an extra touch. And it actually
works out
without actually meaning to do it. He entices Liverpool that extra bit, where I think if he doesn't take that extra touch and tries to clear it, Liverpool are in a slightly better position to win the ball in midfield. When he takes that dodgy touch, Liverpool go bang, and they probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
But you have to give credit. Zaha gets down, it's a good ball, and Townsend makes a really good run. We score that goal, we're raving about it. And it's the kind of perfect storm. Their only player is Wilfried Zaha. Let's be perfectly honest about it. The whole tactic is get it to Wilfried Zaha. Mm. And then we have a fella at 33 playing at right back. And people say, oh, we always target the right hand side. You have to fucking target somewhere, because you're not going over to Robertson and Van Dijk and trying to play.
Let me stop you there. I totally believe that the reason why teams are targeting the right hand side is that the coverage offered by Salah is not as good as the coverage offered by Mane on the left hand side. Whoever's playing on the right flank, that's meant to be supporting there. If you ever look, when anyone looks to break on the left hand side of us, Mane is always in frame. He's got Robertson's got Mane always within arm shot of him, because Mane trusts himself to be able to break.
Yeah, as Nathan said earlier.
Yeah, we're gambling on that side. That's what we're doing. We're playing Russian roulette on that side.
And we can get away with it when Trent is there, but it's very hard to change how you play as a team, because all your formations and your systems, the way you work, is set a certain way, and you're reliant on Milner when he goes in there right back to play that role. But you don't have that insurance.
It'll be interesting to see how Fabinho plays there if he does slot in, because I don't know if Trent will be ready and back for Leicester.
But you got to accept that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You could easily turn around to Trent and say, listen, he's a teenager. Sit back. Don't push. Don't take any risks.
They trust
him. That's not what they want. Like, they want him playing the balls that he's played in this season. Yeah. They want him far up the pitch and take
a risk.
How many goals have they conceded this season?
14. Yeah.
So
it's ridiculous from 23
But
games.
They want Trent to be high up the pitch. You know, Trent, if he's playing the other day and you're saying a ball that he does know what he means and he puts it out left, Trent's probably on Zaha up his arse.
He's playing the recovery speed.
They want Trent high up the pitch, the same with Robertson. They want Mane to come in, they want Salah to come in, and they want them two lads in the midfield to go, I'm that cover there.
Yeah,
you go and do what you need to do.
Yeah, Trent has no problem with a player staying wide, because he's got the legs to get out of him, and he's good at pushing the players down the side. When Trent struggled was when the players got in between him
and
the centre half. I think it was a couple of times against Spurs, United last year.
It was a bit of ball watching.
I think it was just positional.
It way too long. It was ball watching.
Teams are playing in that. You know, Klopp likes to call the half space.
Yep.
And they were able to do the damage. Well,
No.
You always know Phil wants you to shut the fuck up because you're talking about it, and he's just, yep. And then points at you. And you're like, what? And he goes, no, nothing. Carry on. No, like, you're so normal.
But hurry up.
Milner hasn't got the legs to stay tied to the centre back and then get out and fucking do anything else. So,
I hear you.
Milner wasn't doing a good job, but he's better at segues.
The one thing I want to take it on then is the narrative. Nathan, you're in the media, so you can.
I'm all about narrative.
Yeah, and all about the agenda and the narratives that are out there, right? But they've successfully developed their narrative against Salah being a diver at this stage, and this is being construed heavily through, and I won't say the Irish media, but obviously the English, there's been an English focus for the last 6 to 8 weeks on Salah being a diver.
Well, do you think he dived at the weekend?
This weekend?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
This one, yeah.
Last weekend was a strange one in that he did kick him. It was the delayed reaction, then it was slightly over the top. He goes down like he's been shot.
Yeah. I've seen someone say then that someone stood on him then. I didn't see that.
No.
This week or last week?
At that penalty incident.
This week with Sacco.
Was it Milojevic?
No, but it kicked off with them going into
Salah done the first swipe. It looked like something was said to him and he kicked out and then he got kicked himself.
Ah, well then, that's
good. Salah kicked out, didn't he? I didn't see that.
Hope you get fans.
But this is what you're going to get. Like, it's a title race.
Yeah.
It's a...
Players get
the
most,
the best supported club in the country. Everybody wants to have a pop, so they need something.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you just got to get on with it.
And
there's no reason why he won't get more penalties.
Yeah,
I know people think, oh, and there will be decisions people will think were 50-50, should have gone.
But players are going to leave a leg out. He's going to go over and he's going to get penalties.
And
he's the best player in the best team.
Maybe it goes the other
way.
Maybe defenders start to think, well, the ref won't give it because they'll think he dived.
Yeah. Mm.
And you'll probably see every defender now going, no, dive. But... like he has on occasion gone down
a little
easily.
But I don't have any problem with diving, and I'm not one of these people who see diving as the worst form of cheating, generally because I don't think it's particularly premeditated in that it's a spur of the moment, okay, I'm going to do it type scenario.
Yeah.
It's not something they've decided an hour beforehand. If I get first time I get the ball in the area, I'm going down. And also, every player does it.
Well, Zaha has a great dive. I just want to bring
striker who doesn't do it.
The flip side is Zaha does love a dive as well.
Yeah. Zaha went down the box and halfway down realised I shouldn't have done that and tried to get back up.
But I was saying earlier, Zaha, like Salah, also gets battered in every single match.
Yeah.
So part of it is he's anticipating getting clattered, so he's almost going down. Like Harry Kane does this all the time. They're going to come and try and nail me.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go down before he nails me.
I'm going to knock the ball past and put my body into the tackle.
It's become like a competition now, right? In the media. The Kane dive, the Dali dive, the Salah, and they're literally trying to argue against all these different points week on week. We talked about Salah last season and how many penalties could he have had because he didn't go down. He doesn't get the penalty. Now he's gone down. And let's be honest about it. The one against Newcastle is quite soft, but the guy puts his hand on him, right?
Yeah.
He gets one against Arsenal, which is a penalty. He gets one against Brighton, which is a penalty. He doesn't get one the other day, and he goes down a bit soft. Like Nathan said, a bit 50-50. It's the dark arts of the game. And look at Suarez. Suarez used to get kicked up and down like Zaha, right? And he'd be in the box.
Never.
Hold on. He plays away to Arsenal in a cup game, Suarez, right? Gets absolutely nailed, doesn't get a penalty. He gets one 10 minutes later. And then he decides, I'll tell you what I'll do. Don't mind the foul me. I'm just going to start kicking the ball directly at the fucking hand in the box. And there's nothing I can do about it. And that's the tactic he came up with. He does it at Old Trafford, right? Where instead of taking players on, he just goes, I'm going to kick it at you. And then 2 weeks later, he decides at West Ham, I'm going to do the same. I think it might have been Tompkins playing for them at the time. And he just kicks for Tompkins.
Yeah.
And he decides, I'm not getting these penalties. I'm going to find another way to do it.
People forget that Suarez did have a nemesis in England, and it was James Collins. Anyone to go back and watch his games against James Collins, he couldn't, for whatever reason, whether he thought it was Paul O'Connell or something.
Yeah, but I thought he's had him done in at this stage.
Look, I want to wind it on then. Not just the agenda, but to make up for the difference in not getting the penalties, how much money did Spironi get for his two assists?
He's on the fucking payroll on Anfield. There's no question about it.
Carroll's allowance on him.
Yeah. Have you seen?
That was fucking.
I put him in midfield for my fantasy football.
You haven't played in what, 3.5 years?
Yeah.
39.
Oh. Feel like giving Phil Casey again.
I was just waiting for the offside flag to go up against Salah for tapping it in on the line. Yeah. Like if that, oh, yeah.
There's mad shit going on. If I didn't support Liverpool, I'd be saying they, you know, our name's on the fucking trophy.
Yeah, it's exactly the sort of shit like that used to happen to United.
Mm, yeah,
the goal, the fucking Pickford thing where he clawed the ball back into play.
Fucking Enrico Macarena. Yeah. For United a few years. I know it was Makeda.
Van Dijk's shot against Everton that led to that. Yeah. I mean, how did that end up in such a difficult situation for the goalkeeper? And the exact same. It just goes up in the air, and then there's like a magnet on it. It falls into a fucking danger area. And then Salah finishes it with the most unconventional flick.
Mm.
Like, pointed the wrong way and everything.
I'm trying to remember who was commentating at the game. It wasn't your Belldale self, Nathan. Anyway, it was someone else who was commentating on Saturday, and on TV, and they were like, the class and composure in that finish from Mohamed Salah.
He's bottling it.
I'm not so sure there was as much class in that as you think there was.
I heard that.
I think he might have just went, oh, bollocks. I'm not sure he doesn't even know he's onside.
I think he thought the keeper was going to smash
it. Because they showed the view from behind the goal saying, again, to prove the skill involved. It's like, it looks as though he just lifts his foot and toe pokes it, and it could... He may have been trying to control it.
And a cognac in his hand.
I don't think he was trying to knock it in off the right-hand post.
Yeah.
But then again, most keepers are probably expecting that to drop him to the dribble and smash it.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of going, you fucking didn't do that.
Normally Speroni'd come there and have like a wardy. He'd be better than Nero.
Oh, he's been on his peak, right? And he's pulling things out. Yeah.
This is one of the rare times that a goalkeeper comes and is worse than
he couldn't do it, Phil.
He couldn't. Even the Mane goal.
The Mane goal, he fell on the ground.
I gave up playing all them computer games years ago because he used to smash joypads. That's the type of thing that would happen to me.
In a game of FIFA.
But the one he missed back, I don't know what he's doing. You know, there's no goalkeeper.
It's like he's half asleep and he's suddenly talking to us. Should I catch it or should I just?
It's the sort of goal that when you watch Goldbridge playing FIFA and it goes in against him, you're like, that is the video of the fucking year. Do you know what I mean? It was just, he couldn't dive. And I couldn't understand for the life of me why we weren't just absolutely hammering
shots into the corner.
Stop trying to play it around. Just get a bit of space and lamp it.
Like when the centre half goes in goals for last 10 minutes, you're like, just shoot.
Quinn's in goal.
Quinn was a lot more solid than that. Right, I want to round it up and wrap it up on this. So where am I? Yeah, this one. The lads are going off for 10 days to Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the big video of today was obviously Oxlade-Chamberlain in what looks like a lot more intensive training sessions, right? I firmly believe that he wouldn't be back this season, the type of injury, etc. it was.
That was before we got the Man City physio.
Yeah, then we got the Man City physio and he's back 3 weeks later. Gomez is back, Trent is back, and Wijnaldum is back. But the issue is, I think Fabinho has a hamstring strain.
Yeah, he seems all right, though. The talk that came out after the game was, it was a strain, but he'd be fine. Mm. It could be a week, but that's grand. We're off for 10 days. Yeah, 10 days. No.
10 from when?
10, yeah.
It's 8 from now. Sorry, it's a Tuesday night, isn't it?
Is it? It's a Wednesday.
I fucking love Andy to rock into Liverpool on the Wednesday morning, pick up the paper and go, ah, me bollocks.
They've got to take advantage of this, though. Like,
absolutely.
Having the break, then they sort of play the Wednesday night, they don't play again until the following Monday.
Mm.
So there should be no issue for the next 3 weeks with any sort of fatigue. Like, they should be.
And it's given players
they should be fresh, lightning.
Yeah,
lightning quick.
My only issue is when Liverpool have these 10 day breaks, and then I always find that they can be a little bit sluggish. That's just me. I'm probably completely wrong. Andy will tell me the stats about our results after 10 day breaks.
It's just that this year is different.
Yeah, it is different, but I just find...
Are you worried about the time difference?
It could be the time difference because we're 26 minutes behind. But it's not. It's just, I think we're a bit sluggish after 10 days break going into a game. I'd rather just have a game every 4 to 5 days right until May. But let's
I'm sure the players and the manager want those.
But it's not. I'm making the decisions, not them.
It's selective, though, isn't it? Like, if you're coming off a run of really good form and you haven't got injuries, you're dying to play again.
Mm.
But I think this has come at the perfect time.
It might do, because it was a bit patchy, even though we were winning. And the injuries, it might be like,
I think
again,
the game, I think that game sent the shits up all of us, really. You know,
Yeah, that's the first time I've been nervous. No joke, that's the first time I've been nervous during a game this season.
I think it could be a massive thing for them to come off the pitch and Klopp to say, you got 3 points, but that was nowhere near good enough, and it's not to happen again. It could be a real kick up the arse they need. Rather than coming out with a draw and everyone's down.
12 days is a huge amount of time, or whatever it is, from the game, 11 days. It's a huge amount of time in football for recoveries, for players who were injured, getting back up to speed. If they're doing top-notch training sessions, which they will
be. Or the likes of Keita.
Top-notch, yes.
Or the likes of Keita being integrated a bit more into what we're trying to do. You never know.
And doing good jobs.
Doing very good jobs.
Well, just the general stress.
Good jobs,
yeah. Like, again, we're talking about what it's going to be like suffocating at Anfield. I wouldn't be surprised if they go away a few times between now and the end of the season when they get these FA Cup breaks, just to get the hell out of England and reading the
papers. Get a week away from it.
Yeah, and just try and relax.
Yeah, go to Wales.
Haven't they scheduled I think they scheduled a Spanish trip for the next FA, or the March FA Cup round, or the international break, or whatever it is, to take whoever's not going to the international break.
Are we sending the correspondence over?
I'll take the job.
I'll go with you.
I'll bring one of those bags and just put my earphones into it and pretend it's a sound bag. You get a push with a big, huge, fluffy
top-notch training.
Right, lads, look, there's no game
doing the jobs
to preview in terms of what's there, but, you know, just to wrap it up, context, 60 points, 23 games. It's unheard of. It's unfounded in my time supporting Liverpool. If you look at the 88-89 team, they would have had the equivalent of 41 points or something.
Are we now ahead of where City were at this time last season?
No, there was three previous teams at 62 points, I think, at this stage.
Chelsea would have been one of them.
Oh, Chelsea, City, five. And Spurs in 61 were the only, and they all had 62 points at this stage.
Right, okay.
I just don't see, like we have lads in WhatsApp groups, and, you know, I would see myself kind of level-headed on things, but I'm actually getting into this now where I think we're winning it. And I'm convincing myself we're winning it, and I have lads going,
like Danny Murphy.
It's not happening. Yeah. It's just not happening. We're losing it, and, like, there's lads there, and then we go a goal like down, and they're absolutely falling the fucking Sunday.
No,
you know?
I'm willing.
Your life is finished if we win this league. you've no meaning to go on. There's no meaning to your life.
They don't even know what's going on, though. Like, no. You can't fucking go back to WhatsApp after watching the game 90 minutes and there's 400 fucking messages unread. That's what I had.
Yeah.
And there's like 8 or 9 in the group.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not a mathematician, but it's a lot of messages.
45 each.
That's a lot of messages.
There's 8 or 9 in the group, and there's only 400 messages. That's at least 5 messages a man.
And if you average that out across 90 minutes,
what's all the cunt of sending 8 messages during the match?
Yeah. You know, so they don't know what's going on. Don't mind them.
I'm not minding them, Andy.
We know.
I know. We know.
I'm very positive. I have been all season.
No, I just think, you know, people are saying, like, no, we can't keep this up, and 4 points isn't enough, and, you know, City will do this and City will do that. At the end of the day, the table speaks for itself, and we are 4 points clear to City.
What would the table say if we could talk?
It would say, yous are really good. And yous over there, yous are really good, but yous aren't quite as good as them, but you never know.
You haven't conceded a lot of goals.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
Rio Ferdinand
is a fucking idiot. Right? Let's get down to it. He started on Newcastle last week, right?
Oh,
he got absolutely hammered, and he decided to just
put a fishing rod.
Listen, he's a fucking idiot, right? And when he goes for Liverpool, he decides, I'm going to do this and I'm going to say that. It's as simple as that. Completely out of order. Move on.
He was very serious throughout that whole show.
He was saying that this is symptomatic of Liverpool's problems in defence. Now, this season.
With 13 goals conceded in the league in 23 games.
It's the helter-skelter type, and this is why they won't win the league, because they conceded 3 goals at home.
That's not actually how he said it at all. It was very complimentary.
No,
Liverpool. Aside from...
But we're not trying to be factual.
Okay, take it all back.
There's no place for facts.
How dare you bring facts into this? It's opinion.
This is a character assassination of Rio Ferdinand, and I will continue my point.
Don't put a mark on that. Thanks.
Listen, it was a silly comment by him. I don't mind Ferdinand. I think he's actually decent enough on BT, but you do see him sometimes, like, he's been on his phone texting, and then they say, like, Rio, what do you think of that? And he's like, his brain isn't switched on to actually what the point was.
It was like he was doing something to get away from the Newcastle situation last week and decided to pick this.
No, did you not see he was so serious throughout the whole show? Normally he's like, tries to have a bit of crack. He was dead serious. Wasn't a fucking smear cow for the whole thing.
Yeah,
he got talking about Liverpool because he realises that they're probably going to win the league. He's shitting it, and then he starts just spouting shite because he has to drag back drag him back, drag himself. That was
well
easy
to say. Well, no, I agree with Andy.
You should be on BT Sport with that type of analysis.
Back away from back in
Scatman John
here. he just invented a scenario in his head that Liverpool had conceded three goals
every game.
Well said.
Good job.
Doing a great job.
Now you know, indeed. Right, that's about a wrap there. So big thanks, Nathan, for coming this evening. Anything lined up on that you want to tell us about off the ball? You might as well plug it while you're here.
No, I'm not doing Liverpool again after the United game. I'm on City Watch. I'm at the Arsenal game and the Chelsea game over the next couple of weeks. So
it's not bad games to be after all the same.
Do you all get assigned a team, or do you just whatever way it falls? Well, I don't know how it happens, seem to end up doing all the Liverpool matches are on a Sunday, and one of my fellow co-commentators ends up doing all the Manchester United matches, and we've yet to fall out over it.
So it works well.
Hopefully it goes. Funnily enough, my first ever Liverpool commentary was the day Steven Gerrard slipped.
Oh, Jesus.
Was it?
Oh God, delete the fucking podcast.
Sorry to end on a low note.
Everybody, ooh.
Oh God.
Literally, I was like, this is written in the star. First ever Liverpool.
Oh, bollocks. Just live on. Get on there.
Oh, bollocks. There I was thinking Rio Ferdinand was the biggest problem.
Jesus.
Did you ever go up to the old gantry in Anfield before the main stand?
No.
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 No, I was going to ask you what it was like, so.
I did not.
Just make it up and tell me.
Have you done the cat now? I have.
Yeah.
What was the gantry like?
I've done the tour.
Is there a gantry very high?
It is, yeah.
I thought when I was up in the media box up there, I didn't like it. I was freaked out.
Yeah, why? Because it's so high up.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a bit hard to see what's going on.
Yeah.
I find Anfield a bit like that now, since they moved the radio commentator's box
right up,
up to the room. Top of the new stand. Well, it's at the front of the upper tier.
Right.
But it's still... Compared to where you were, which was about 15 rows back.
Perfect position.
Now, for corner kicks and that, especially if you're one side of it, you're looking down the other side. Three people go up, you're trying to figure
out
what's
the best ground for commentating and for viewers, I suppose.
Arsenal, because it's real quiet, so you hear what's going on.
Yeah, well, there is that. No, Arsenal's not a great ground to watch. You're too low down. I always like Selhurst Park as a ground to go to. It's a good commentary position.
Or is that good just crack. From a professional point of view in terms of where you're positioned?
It's a good position, but also it literally rocks when it's going well. Yeah. And generally, if they're playing the Sunday, it's probably against one of the better teams. It'll be good atmosphere and they'll be up for it.
Right.
I shouldn't say it, but Goodison Park is...
is it?
Well, it's old school. Like,
yeah.
It's...
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason they're trying to get out of it. Like, nothing...
Yeah, no, it's...
The press box
it's made
is
of wood.
Literally... There's
is
no,
it jam?
It's made of wood. There's no room. The supporters are right behind you. Actually, I made the terrible mistake once of... do you remember the 2-2 draw? About 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, when Suarez dived
in front of David Moyes.
I just went to go and watch the match.
Right.
So when Suarez scored, I gave a little fist pump, which I wouldn't normally do if I was actually working. We sit literally right.
I was in the commentator's press box sitting here, but not actually commentating.
Thousands of Everton supporters are literally in the room. Oh my God!
To get dogs.
The abuse.
It's a funny one actually, because when I started going to games, I was going to the Derby quite regularly in Goodison, and you could get away with sort of going in your colours and. Sitting around and not going mad if there was a goal scored, but you'd get away with a fist bump or whatever else. And then I remember getting threatened that I was going to get the shit kicked out of me. The time Harry Kewell scored, we beat them 3-0, and Kewell scored, and there was a fella in the upper Bullens. And he wanted to. We literally had our jerseys on and zipped up to the very top, but you could see a little bit of red, and he was fucking fuming, threatening to kill us. And it was kind of like after that year, it was like, you just didn't go with colours on then. It was just a funny one. The whole vibe over the next 3-4 years changed.
I think that was down to Moyes.
All because of you.
No. I'm an influencer. What can I say? It was when there was rows in the city centre and stuff like that around the games as well. And you didn't necessarily have that shit beforehand.
Moyes, I thought, turned it. Moyes came in and he was kind of like, you know, we're this club and we're that club. And
I thought he turned the atmosphere a bit. Yeah.
I don't mind that. But I do remember listening to stewards one day. They were doing their like pre-match briefing before Merseyside Derby at Anfield, and they were saying that they were telling the stewards this game is different.
Right.
There was a, if you see an Everton supporter, so any other match, if you see an opposition supporter in a Liverpool section, you get throw them out. They're gone straight away.
Yeah.
They're saying this is different.
Yeah, because it could be a family.
You might
member,
have a word with them, but they can stay.
Yeah,
as long as obviously it's not kicking off.
But. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think the
Goodison side. I think there is, for want of a better word, there is a lot of bitterness there because it's been so long since they won a match against us.
I think
that builds and builds and builds and builds, and they're just literally pissed off. And if we go and win,
it's a change in mentality from the fans, not from the clubs. I think it's still fine to go in and be a mixed.
The club were a bit mad though. Do you remember they built a big box so you couldn't see Anfield from Goodison? Yeah, do you remember? And they said it was a box he built, and they said they were putting a new fucking central heating in or something. I don't know what they were putting in, but it was like
just an empty box.
It was just a box he built so you couldn't see Anfield. They genuinely done that.
That's because you could see the new stand from Goodison.
The new stand could be seen. So they went there.
It was just a big piece of steel.
Yeah, just in the shape of a box.
Not even painted blue or anything. It's just a box. Just right, look, we'll wrap it there. A big thanks as ever again, Nathan. Thanks for coming in this evening. Yeah. Gav, Andy, Steve, well done. Steve, Sean Cox appeal.
Yes.
All the details, free pod out with Martina Cox interview. Yeah. And do your thing.
Yeah, sorry, for anybody who's listening on Periscope already, you'll have heard this, but yeah, there is an interview going out in the next day or two, full interview, 20 minutes or so, with Martina, which we did before Christmas time, just really outlining, for people who don't know, lots of people have heard about Sean Cox, lots of people have got an idea of what happened to him, but maybe don't know what's going on at the moment. That really outlines where things are at with him, with the family, why it's so important that the support continues there, because these things can be hugely, I suppose, pushed for a little while and then they drift off. So obviously there is the game coming up in the Aviva in April, and there will be other stuff going on around that. But for the moment, we have our interviews. The first five have gone out. It is Jamie Carragher, John Barnes, Brian Kerr, Shay Given and Jose Enrique. So from that point of view, what we'd love people to do is come on to the Twitter page. There's a link there. You can go onto our website and click the heading Sean Cox interviews. Yeah. You just register. You literally register your name and your email address.
All the links are there.
€5.
All the links are there. Yeah. You get in. Donate to £5. Donate to £10.
£5.
Or £10 to get all 15.
Yep.
And do it. There's no excuses not to do it as a Liverpool fan, assuming you have a few quid to spare.
Absolutely.
Right, that's a wrap. The lads will be back on Thursday night. The Cop Table will also have the podcast out Thursday and out Friday morning. The YouTube show is on Thursday night with Gav and whoever else is knocking about at that stage.
Yeah.
And then we're back in here Monday where we'll preview Leicester.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We'll probably do a final whistle or something after
the Leicester game.
We will do a final whistle.
And we'll have a lot more around the Sean Cox thing as well as the weeks go on. So
Absolutely. That's
it. We want to say that's a wrap. So good night, God bless, and we'll talk to you all next.
Summer's coming, Washington, D.C., and so are pesky mosquitoes. Don't let mosquitoes ruin your backyard fun. Call your local True Green experts for True Green Mosquito Defense. The science-based treatment will help control mosquitoes in your yard within 24 hours and keep your family and pets comfortable all season long. Save 50% on your first mosquito service by visiting truegreen.com/summer or call 877-629-0092. Say goodbye to mosquitoes and hello to the perfect outdoor space for summer. Call True Green today.
Time to fire up the grill.
Time to go to Total Wine and find the perfect flavor to pair with those burgers.
Ooh, I love their beer cooler.
You love their prices even more.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, ridiculously low prices. Total Wine and more.
Sports Social Podcast Network.